The gym is 42 degrees. That is the temperature Marcus keeps it at, even in the humidity of a Georgia July, because he says the body only truly learns when it is fighting to stay warm. The air smells of ozone and industrial-grade peppermint. My bare feet are pressed against the black rubber matting, which has a slight gritty texture that catches on the calluses of my heels. To my left, a single silver stopwatch sits on a wooden stool. It does not tick. It only counts in digital silence, the red numbers flickering against the gray light of the 4 a.m. window. I can see the condensation from my breath blooming in the air and then vanishing. A rhythmic proof of life in a room that feels like a vacuum. The water in my steel bottle is room temperature, Marcus says. Ice is a crutch for the weak, a way to distract the nerves from the work they are doing. I take a sip, and the liquid slides down my throat with a heavy metallic weight. Outside, the world is a smudge of charcoal and navy blue. The streetlights on the corner are still flickering, struggling against the dawn. My phone is in a locker 3 rooms away, behind 2 locked doors. It has been there for 6 days. Marcus has the only key, not because he is a jailer, but because he is a curator. He tells me that the noise of the outside world is a toxin, more corrosive than sugar, more debilitating than a torn meniscus. The squat rack is cold. When I wrap my hands around the knurling of the barbell, the steel bites into my palms. It is a sharp, honest sensation. It is the only thing that feels real anymore. He didn't start with the career. He started with the way I carried my shoulders. He told me I looked like a woman who was carrying the weight of a dying empire, and that the empire didn't deserve my spine. I was a senior vice president at 32. I had a corner office that looked out over the canopy of Buckhead, a car that cost more than my mother's first house, and a collection of power suits that felt like armor. But Marcus looked at me in that first session and didn't see the title. He saw the slight tremor in my left eyelid. He saw the way I checked my smartwatch every 45 seconds. He saw the inflammation in my joints and called it what it was, a slow-motion suicide. He told me that my job was a parasite. He used that word specifically while he was adjusting my form on a deadlift. He said the board of directors was drinking my youth through a straw and calling it a salary. At first, I laughed. I told him that was the price of the seat. He didn't laugh back. He just added another 45-pound plate to the bar and told me that if I had the strength to carry their company, I had the strength to carry myself away from it. The transition happened in the quiet spaces between sets. It was the way he looked at me when I mentioned a missed call from my sister. He wouldn't say I shouldn't talk to her. He would only ask if our conversation had elevated my heart rate or lowered it. He would ask if she was an asset to my peak potential or a drain on my recovery. When I admitted she usually complained about her husband for an hour, he would simply nod and go back to the stopwatch. The silence was the indictment. He made me feel like every minute I spent on someone else's drama was a minute I was stealing from the goddess he was trying to carve out of my marble. I remember the day I turned in my resignation. It was raining, a thin gray drizzle that turned the city into a watercolor painting. I walked into the gym, and Marcus was standing by the window, his dark skin glowing under the recessed LED lights. He didn't ask if I did it. He just handed me a glass of green juice that tasted like dirt and victory. He told me that I was finally breathing for the first time in a decade. He said that my family wouldn't understand, because people who live in the valley always resent the people who start climbing the mountain. My sister called 16 times that night. I watched the screen glow on the kitchen counter until Marcus reached over and turned it face down. He didn't force me. He just asked if I wanted to go back to being the woman with the trembling eyelid. I didn't. I wanted to be the woman who could hold a plank for 6 minutes while the world burned down around her. Now the gym is my entire geography. I live in the guest suite of the facility. It is a minimalist space with white walls and a bed that is firm enough to keep the spine in perfect alignment. There are no mirrors in the suite. Marcus says mirrors encourage vanity, and vanity is a distraction from function. He provides the clothes, gray compression gear, that fits like a second skin. He provides the food, lean proteins, and steamed greens, measured to the gram. He provides the schedule. There was a moment, 3 weeks ago, when I thought about leaving. It was a Tuesday. I had found a stray postcard in the back of a drawer, a picture of the Amalfi Coast my mother had sent years ago. The colors were so bright they hurt my eyes. I felt a sudden sharp ache in the center of my chest, a longing for a glass of red wine, and a conversation that wasn't about lactic acid or macronutrient timing. I put on my sneakers, the ones I used to wear for casual walks, not the lifting shoes Marcus bought me, and I walked toward the front door. The door wasn't locked. Marcus was standing there, polishing a kettlebell with a white cloth. He didn't move to stop me. He didn't raise his voice. He just looked at me, his eyes calm and endlessly deep, and asked me where I was going to go. He asked me if I was going back to the cubicle. He asked if I was going back to the people who only loved me when I was doing something for them. He pointed out the slight puffiness in my ankles, a sign of salt intake he hadn't authorized. He told me that if I walked out that door, I was consenting to be mediocre again. He said that the world outside was designed to keep me small, tired, and compliant. The cost of leaving was the realization that I had no one to go to. I had deleted the emails. I had ignored the texts. I had told my mentor at the firm that he was a hollow man in a hollow suit during my exit interview. Words Marcus had whispered to me the night before. I had burned the bridges, and Marcus was the only one holding the torch. I looked at the street outside. The noise, the filth, the people moving like zombies in their cheap suits. And then I looked at the clean, cold, disciplined sanctuary of the gym. I turned around and went back to the squat rack. I did 4 more sets than he asked for. The failure point, I think, was the morning he told me to sell the house. He said the mortgage was a tether, a ghost of a life I no longer lived. He said the equity could be used to fund my ascension, a private, year-long intensive training cycle where we would travel to a high-altitude camp in the desert. He told me he would handle the paperwork. He told me he would be my sole point of contact with the world, to ensure nothing interfered with my cortisol levels. I signed the power of attorney yesterday. My hand didn't shake. I felt a strange, detached sense of relief as the pen moved across the paper. It felt like I was shedding a heavy coat. I don't need a house. I don't need a career. I don't need a family that demands my time and energy without offering any peak potential in return. Marcus is behind me now. I can hear the soft scuff of his sneakers on the rubber mat. He doesn't touch me, but I can feel the heat radiating from his body in the 42-degree air. He is the only source of warmth in this room. He is the only person who knows how many grams of protein are in my blood. He is the only person who knows exactly how much weight my spine can handle before it snaps. "The bar is waiting," he says. His voice is a low, rhythmic vibration that settles in the base of my skull. I reach out and grip the steel. My knuckles are white. My palms are raw. I can see the clock on the stool. 4:12 a.m. I have 48 minutes of training left before my first scheduled meal. I have 14 days until we leave for the desert. I have $0 in my savings account. I step under the bar. The weight settles onto my traps, heavy and unforgiving. It feels like the world is trying to crush me into the floor. I take a deep breath, the cold air stinging my lungs, and I drop into the squat. My knees ache. My heart hammers against my ribs. I reach the bottom, the point of no return, where the muscles are screaming and the mind is begging for a break. "Drive," Marcus whispers, and I drive. I push against the floor with everything I am, ignoring the black spots dancing in my vision. I rise, not because I want to, but because he is watching. I am his masterpiece. I am his project. I am a finely tuned instrument, with no one left to play it but him. The bar clangs back into the rack. The sound echoes in the empty gym, a sharp, violent note that lingers in the silence. I am gasping for air, my chest heaving, the sweat beginning to freeze on my forehead. Marcus steps forward and hands me a towel. It is white and perfectly folded. "You're getting faster," he says. He doesn't smile. He just looks at the stopwatch. But your transition was sluggish. You're still holding on to the ghost of that office chair. You're still thinking about the woman who used to live in that house. I'm not, I say. My voice is raspy. A thin shadow of the voice that used to command boardrooms. She's gone. Prove it, he says. He picks up 2 45-pound plates and slides them onto the bar. The steel clinks, a final heavy sound. Again, I don't look at the door. I don't look at the window. I don't think about the phone in the locker. I think about the rhythm of my breath. I think about the cold. I think about the way the rubber feels under my feet. I am the only thing in the world. And he is the only thing in the world. And the weight is the only truth. I step back under the bar. I am perfectly balanced. I am perfectly alone. I am exactly where he wants me to be. And the terrifying part is that I have never felt more powerful. I am a weapon with no target. I am a runner with no finish line. I am a woman who has been stripped of everything until all that remains is the ability to endure. I drop into the squat. The cold air catches in my throat. I am falling, and I am rising, and I am disappearing into the red numbers of the clock. He is right. My career was killing me. It was a slow, messy death. This is different. This is clean. This is disciplined. This is a transformation so total that I don't even remember what color my front door was. I don't remember the sound of my sister's laugh. I only remember the weight. Lower, Marcus commands. I go lower. I go until my hamstrings touch my calves. I go until the pressure in my head feels like it might burst my eardrums. I stay there for a heartbeat, suspended in the dark. And then I push. I push until the empire is gone. I push until the only thing left is the man with the stopwatch and the silence of the 4 a.m. gym. I am his. Every muscle, every calorie, every heartbeat. And as I stand back up, locking my knees, I realize that the danger isn't that he's taking my life. The danger is that he's the only one who made me feel like it was worth keeping. I rack the weight. The silence returns. The stopwatch continues its invisible count. One more set, he says. I reach for the bar. I don't even hesitate.